You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham SC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show, brought to you by The Athletic UK. And today we're going to do the last word from Stoke on Saturday. We're going to be discussing Rodrigo Muniz, Jay Stansfield's new contract, what's the latest with Fabio Carvalho, looking ahead to Blackpool at the weekend, which we believe is happening. And of course, lots of correspondence at the end, including a big moment for This Will Catch On, because finally one of our songs did catch on. It's a very, very exciting week for the podcast. And it's the regular Thursday Club with me today, Jack Collins. Hello.
Hello, listeners. Hello, Sammy. How are we doing?
Fine, thank you. And Peter Rutzler, Fulham writer for The Athletic.
Hey, Sammy. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Thank you for asking. So let's do some final word from Stoke on Saturday. A brilliant win for Fulham. It did move us 8 points clear, Peter. That's now back down to 5 because Blackburn got a good win against Middlesbrough on Monday. But of course, 8 points clear of Bournemouth in third. And Peter, Jack touched on this on Sunday's podcast that he hosted. Yes, it was great, the 7-0, the 2-6-2s, but really this win against Stoke with a depleted side, no Mitro, no Wilson, for me is the most impressive win of the season. The circumstances, coming back from deficits twice, really, really showed some character that we maybe doubted in this Fulham team earlier in the season.
Yeah, no, we have definitely doubted that. You think to the Coventry game and you think to the way the team has responded in those moments of adversity and that sort of underlying sense of maybe when things get a bit tricky, they may not be able to deal with it. But I don't think it can get too much trickier than the way, you know, Saturday panned out in terms of losing Alexander Mitrovic, losing Harry Wilson. Obviously, confidence is high and everything else, but you then go a goal down early, you know... There's always the expectations that heads will drop, but I agree with what Jack said at the weekend. It's certainly a really, really important win for Fulham. We talked about how you know getting that fourth win in a row is really, really, really important. Building that momentum, building a gap, making those big wins actually count as well. And you don't want to start. You know, it's great to have those results. You know, those are the results you will remember and look back on really fondly, but you need to actually get the job done as well. And going to Stoke was, it did feel like that, getting the job done. I didn't think the performance was particularly good, second half especially. I think the Kenny Tesser injury really floored Fulham a little bit. I mean, it became very, very stop-start. They never really regained control of the game. But despite that, they still found a way to win. And that's a really, really important quality to have. And they never really looked like conceding until the late subs came on and had a big impact for Stoke. But massive 3 points. Really, really important. Could see from just the reaction in the dugout, could see from the reaction among the players. Silver afterwards was really, really pleased. He did very much a poker face whenever he speaks to the media. But he even used the word statement. And he was talking more about, you know, the fact that it shows we're not reliant on Mitrovic. But we sort of knew that already. I thought it was more a statement because of the fact, as you say, Sammy, coming from behind twice in a week to record a win and then getting that result when things are going against you and securing it. So, yeah, a big step forward.
Jack, on your other podcast, Ranks FC, you often talk about teams and leagues being in the bag. Now, what do Fulham have to do from here? And I'm assuming you're not going to say it's in the bag yet.
I'm not, full stop, because I'm way too scared of it to do it with my own club. Like, there are things.
What level do Fulham have to get to other than mathematically?
Yeah, literally mathematically. there are clubs I will call this for. There have been bold calls. I called Ajax having won the Eredivisie in October when they were 2 points behind, just because I thought they were so good. But I'm just not willing to risk it all on this one, I'm afraid. It's just something that I can't risk coming back to bite me. So I'm afraid not. But look, you know what you've got to look at. And interestingly, I was watching Steffi Hansen last night talking after the QPR game, and he was saying, you know, each point counts, and they obviously missed up an opportunity to go and take on and go second outright in their own right, or at least have the opportunity to do so with the game in hand. But in doing so, he said, look, the key is that you need to be in touching distance with 7-8 games to go. And if you're in that, then anything can happen, because this is the Championship and this is what happens, and teams get momentum and all of the above. You know, we're looking at Fulham, and we want Fulham to be out of sight of the teams below them with 7-8 games to go, right? And I don't mean that in that 24 points clear, because I don't think that's going to be, you know, possible or feasible. But what I do think it is possible to be sort of 14, 15 points clear with 9, 10 games to go. I think you're going to be like, the teams below you, as I said, you know, last week, the teams below you are going to start to take points off each other. They're going to be looking at fighting each other. They're going to be wanting Fulham to beat the teams below them in order to keep themselves in the race for that second spot. That's where you're looking to get to, right? You're looking to get, so the other teams aren't actually even considering you in the race anymore. Because at that point, I think you've done what you need to do mentally to get yourselves over the line.
Well, that's why this next six for me, absolutely crucial. The game's coming up. Pretty much everyone we face is, I wanted to say they're all in the bottom half, but they're not quite. Huddersfield, the obvious exception, but Blackpool are actually in 12th, so technically in the top half. But pretty much five out of the next six are in the bottom half plus one of the table. So certainly the matches coming up are crucial. I saw a brilliant article this morning, by the way, which I feel like you'll both enjoy. It was on The Guardian, and it talked about
talking of me making early drop appearances on other podcasts. Sammy made it onto the biggest football podcast in the world. Yeah, so I was on Guardian Football Weekly this week. What a day.
All I'm saying, it hasn't changed me. I'm still the same. I'm still the same Sammy James. Thank you very much. I'm still the same Sammy that started Fulhamish 5 years ago. It's not gone to my head. But anyway, there was a good article in The Guardian, and someone asked the question to their stats column that they have. Fulham are top of the Championship with a goal difference of plus 48. I am acutely conscious of their capacity to screw things up, however. So what is the best goal difference a team has had and not been promoted? Do you want to guess, Jack, what's the best goal difference ever in a British league that has been recorded that didn't get promotion? I'll put this to both of you, actually. We'll do closest answer wins.
56.
Peter?
I can imagine there being like a three-horse race in a league and then a team either struggling in the playoffs. So I'll go 61.
102.
Who got 102 goal difference and didn't get promoted?
It was in the Highland League. United finished second in 2016 with a goal difference of plus 102, which was 32 better than the winners, Cove Rangers. But only the champions got entry into the playoffs for a league place. The league before, Brora won the league with a goal difference of 121, but lost to Montrose in the playoff final.
That's non-league, is it not?
Well, that's the Highland League as well, and they all fill their boots against Fort William, who went like a couple of years without winning a game and would just get battered every week, but there was no relegation. And so if you took them out of the league, they just wouldn't be football in that area west of Scotland. So
a professional football league, Sammy. I refuse to accept that as an answer. You get promotion to the Scottish Professional Football League. You get promotion to Scottish League 2, which is part of the SPFL, right? But the Highland League is not part of the SPFL.
I know, that one's a bit of a red herring. So in the National League, Hereford United finished second in 03-04 with 91 points and a plus 59 goal difference. In recent times, Brentford are the highest, third in 1920 with a goal difference of plus 42. Stockport County, though, in the English professional leagues, I think are the winners with plus 62 in the 29-30 season.
That's a dead-on guess.
Well, there we go. You can have the points, Jack.
A genuine guess as well. Like, I had no idea what was going on there. Normally, I sort of half know these things, and now, like, that is just genuinely pure luck of the draw.
Well done. I will buy you a pint on Saturday.
Thank you. I don't, no, it's your birthday, so you can have a pint. We'll cancel it out. There you go. Oh, all good. All good. But let's go back to Stoke, shall we?
Yes. Peter, Rodrigo Muniz was the star of the show, really. The most incredible start on Saturday. The fact that Demarje Wright Phillips scored after a minute. I'm thinking, oh no, here we go. And then for Fulham to go the other end of the pitch and score. What I love is when you listen to the game on the highlights, which don't have any commentary, how loud the Stoke fans are singing because they've just scored. And Rodrigo Muniz shuts the place up in an instant, an absolute rocket. There's been a lot of doubters about Muniz and whether he really can cut it. Is he a legitimate replacement for Mitrovic? And whilst I don't think anyone's looking at Saturday and saying, oh, he's just as good as Mitrovic, maybe he's going to challenge Mitrovic's place, I think he's more than justified his position as the backup striker, because his goal record now in the league is actually quite impressive.
Yes. Yeah, it is. And you're right. There has been that sort of lingering uncertainty about Rodrigo Muniz, and it's been a bit, you know, unfair in a sense, because he's not really played, has he? I mean, this was only his second league start. So to actually make a proper assessment has been difficult. It's probably difficult anyway, because he wasn't getting loads of minutes at Flamengo either. But then you still wanted to get that reassurance that if Mitrovic suffered an injury, hopefully God forbid he doesn't, but if something like that happened, that you wanted someone to come in and can carry the mantle a little bit. Obviously, Muniz is still a long way off what Mitrovic is currently providing, and he's only 20, and all the other caveats that come with it. But in terms of his performance on Saturday, it was really quite reassuring. Not just in the fact that he scored one goal officially, probably could have been, maybe should have been two,
but should have been two as far as I'm concerned.
Should have been two.
Disgrace.
Not just because of that, but his all round play, I thought, was pretty good. And I can't remember if we discussed it after the Bristol City Cup game, but I didn't think he played particularly well that day. I didn't think his hold-up play was particularly good. I think Rob Atkinson, I think, was a central defender, if I remember rightly, who was marking him. I thought he had his number really that day. And I was like, oh, okay, there's still a few rungs to go here in terms of his development, in terms of getting used to the British game, which is very, very different to what he will have been used to. I thought he was very, very good on Saturday, especially in that respect, in terms of bringing Fulham up the field, his ability to link the play, holding the ball, and it just holding it for that extra second or two. It can make all the difference for when a team needs to move up and get forward, combined really well with those around him as well. And of course, the finishing. That's what strikers are judged by. And scoring so early made such a massive difference. And to score in that way, to silence the crowd like he did. It was one of those strange ones, because I'm so fast. I mean, I was just up and down. I was trying to, you know, do my classic tweet, oh, Fulham are in a 4-3-3 again, which I probably could have done anyway. But it was one of those, you just look up and something was happening. And then you've got the noise going on. And then when the ball goes in, you're never quite sure. And this is definitely the case for the away end with the second goal, because you almost need the sound for reassurance just to say, oh, this is a goal. Like, this has gone in the top corner. It's clearly a goal. And so Hartley's like, is it a goal? And it bounces down and you get the noise. But yeah, fantastic finish. Massive confidence boost. And from there, you just saw it. I mean, there was a great flick. Don't know if you guys like that flick in the first half where he's just done it over the defender's head. He has that sort of Brazilian flair. So we've seen those glimpses. But it's his all-round performance and those... The gritty side, I think, which is what Fulham showed overall. And I think he reflected that.
Yeah, I mean, that's it, isn't it? It's that confidence that erupts straight away. And then suddenly, you know, you have that moment. If one of those goes in, if that comes off the bar, right, and or it goes over the bar by a couple of inches, you suddenly are like, oh, here we go again. You know, it does feel like that, because obviously there was the Derby game where it just wouldn't fall for him and it just didn't fit and nothing quite came off. And, you know, getting that boost of confidence, there's a lot of pressure on that, because obviously you stepped in for Mitrovic, people are going, oh, this could be a nightmare. You're already kind of bearing a load here, and without Wilson is a double whammy. And then you go to that and you finish straight away, and then suddenly the whole game opens up for Muniz, and he looks so confident, he looks so comfortable. He obviously hits the bar, he tries to get a touch on the Carvalho, whether he gets it or not. He's in the right positions. He's in the right places. He's winning headers against a difficult back line. You know, to Marshall, there's three players there. And Howard Bellis is a massively rare talent, I know, at Manchester City. And then you've got the kind of old war dogs in James Chester and Phil Jagielka. That is not an easy back line to come up against. And we talked about this post-derby, right? We talked about the fact that he came up against two experienced heads that knew how to marshal him, and he wasn't given a sniff through the whole game because of that. This time, he was able to kind of negate that by running into the game on such high confidence because of that early goal that he was able to then kind of throw his weight around a little bit, get on the end of things, open up wide, go make runs. It was really, really impressive and really, really good to see.
Peter, you wrote an article on the solution that Muniz solved on Saturday. It was called No Mitrovic, No Problem. And what I love is your line at the end, which I hadn't really clocked until I read it, which was, winning at Stoke City is never easy, and Fulham had failed on their last four visits. The last time they triumphed, cult hero Chris Baird scored twice, leading fans to christen him Bairdinho. It was an actual Brazilian who pushed Fulham to victory this time. And yeah, very fair point, actually. Chris Baird got the nickname for an absolute rocket or two at Stoke City. So maybe it's going to be the moment that endears Rodrigo Muniz to the fans. Everything changed for Chris Baird after that moment.
Yeah, right. A passage game, wasn't it? Well, for Rodrigo Muniz of the weekend, but for Chris Baird, because he had that very difficult start, didn't he, and under Laurie Sanchez. And then Mark Hughes at that point, wasn't it? And it was quite an important game for Hughes as well. And those two goals were absolute rockets, unbelievable goals. It's the nice, easy parallel to do there. But for Muniz, I obviously didn't get a chance to speak to him, and it might be a while before we do with the language and everything. But I do wonder if he was aware of the connotations of doing well at Stoke, you know, in January in the cold. I'm sure it would have been mentioned to him in the dressing room about that and all those cliches that go with it. But I mean, But it generally adds to the confidence element, doesn't it? Once you know these things, that feather in the cap, you can do it, you can compete in this team, you are part of the team, which is one of the big challenges. He went over and celebrated with Ivan Caballero on the touchline after he scored. Kevin Caballero was there, Michael Hector was there. You know, I think that's one of the big challenges for Marco Silva, is making sure that everyone feels included. You know, there are players who don't make the squad, who feel like they, and should be really, if you consider their ability, playing regularly at this level. So trying to keep that feel good factor is important, and when you're a striker who's brought in, who wants to score goals, wants to be playing, these are the moments you've got to embrace and take forward, and that's what's happened over the weekend, and you know, hopefully that's the kind of boost, the kind of thing that ticks him over in the coming weeks.
One thing that was interesting though, Peter, was it Rodrigo Muniz's goal for that second? There was the little flick, which on the replay, it definitely seemed to me like Muniz got a touch on it. It's gone down as a Fabio Carvalho goal. I really enjoyed the interview that Jeff Bruce did with both Fabio and Muniz after the game. He asks, whose goal was it? Was it your goal, Rodrigo? And Rodrigo goes, I just like, don't ask silly questions, Jeff. But you said you'd done some digging into this as to why it's gone down as Fabio's goal and why the dubious goals panel didn't get involved.
Yeah, I mean, loose digging in the loosest sense of the word of digging on what actually happened. But yeah, it's gone down as Carvalho's goal. And I'm with you. I think it should really be Rodrigo Muniz's goal, because I think not only does he just get that tiniest little touch, but I actually think it might just take it inside the post, or at least make it just trickle into off the post in that way. And it may not have done so if it had stayed on its current course. Not that the goal wasn't deserved for Fabio Carvalho, because he wins the ball back, creates it, and then finishes it. So a tricky one. And I'm sure further down the line, if he did end up leaving, it would be good for his compensation package. So with goals like this, they could go to the dubious goals panel, which does actually exist, which is a thing.
How'd you get on it? That's what I want to know.
So this is what I found out. So it only gets, as in to work on it, or how the goal gets there.
No, I don't know. What, I don't know. I want to know how I can get there.
Oh, I don't know. I honestly don't. I think it's hidden. I think there was a Guardian piece done on it a while back, and it's former players and officials, but they're unnamed so that they're not unduly influenced about making a goal decision, which seems almost a bit silly. But
is there that much pressure? Are people blackmailing you? Are people like sending you death threats? Because
Rodrigo Muniz might.
I wonder if it matters, you know, with goal bonuses and things like that. Maybe it does. Maybe it does.
Maybe there's sneaky players being like, I'll give you 50% of my goal bonus.
It could be to do with betting as well, maybe as well.
Yeah, that no, good point.
But yeah, in terms of the goal itself, it has to be It either gets flagged up to them if the referee and the club send two different names, which didn't happen in this case. So both the club and the referee, I think it was Dean White, Dean was referee, said it was Fabio Carvalho's goal. And the only other way it would then get reviewed by the dubious goals panel is if Fulham appealed. And I'm not sure if they have done that. I don't think they intend to do that. So that's how it stands, really. It's gone to Fabio.
Wow. Okay. I did not know how this works. I mean, club podcasters who run a semi-successful club podcast get on the dubious goals panel? Do you know if that may be the criteria for Jack if he ever wants to appear on it?
Yeah, maybe, perhaps. Who knows? We'll see how it goes. I'll wait impatiently for my call up.
For the letter through the post, yeah, like the stone cutters in The Simpsons.
Well, I was thinking more Harry Potter. Like I'm going to get thousands of them down the chimney.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I expect you to get invited to the dubious goals panel.
You have been cordially invited to the dubious goals panel.
Yeah, absolutely.
We meet at the 19th hole at 9.
Yeah, exactly. There you have it. Very good.
If you want to read Peter's piece on Rodrigo Muniz and the impact he had on Saturday, go to theathletic.com/Fulham Pod and you can get 33% off an annual Athletic subscription. After the break, we're going to be discussing Blackpool and Jay Stadfield's new contract. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here with Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
And Peter Rutzler.
Hello, hello.
Jack, by the time that this podcast is out, Jean-Michel Seri will have played a very important match at the African Cup of Nations. We don't know what's going to happen at the moment, but a big night for Jean-Michel Seri. Almost pointless to discuss it because it literally will be a result by the time people hear this. But are they favourites?
It's a pretty even one. It's arguably, you'd look at it on paper and say it's probably the most even of the eight round of 16 games. It's probably the one with the two highest quality teams on both sides of it, Nigeria, Tunisia, perhaps. But yeah, it does feel like it's a real on a knife edge. I would make the Ivory Coast favourites, having watched them and having watched Egypt. Egypt feel a little bit all over the place. Obviously, they have Mohamed Salah, so they can kind of do what they want. And if he gets the ball in the right areas, then he will score. And Egypt did improve. They started off really poorly and then they improved. But the Ivory Coast have really impressed me. I've been pretty taken aback by how good they've been, especially in the last two games. That win over Algeria, obviously in the last game where Algeria are fighting to stay in the competition, the favourites, the holders, and they dispatched them with consummate ease. And Seri was absolutely magnificent in the middle again. So yeah, I fancy them, I think, on paper to get through this. But as we've seen this week, that's not much in terms of how things go. And it has been a bit of a mad round of 16. I think we've had, if I'm not mistaken, 6 red cards in 6 games. Maybe 7, in fact. There's been a lot going on. And I'm sure we're going for an entertaining game. If it gets through this one, they beat Egypt here, you've got to start to think about Ivory Coast as maybe favourites for this entire thing, because they'll have probably dispatched the best group of sides thus far if they get through this.
Yeah, of course. Well, if again, permutations, combinations, if Seri does go out tonight, Peter, does that mean that he could return for Blackpool? Surely too soon. Maybe more likely Man City.
I mean, he'd return before Blackpool. I don't think he would.
Mikel Arteta chucked Thomas Partey in on the day he arrived. That went well.
That went very well. But so he would return, and it would mean, I think, that Fulham wouldn't have three internationals during this break. So I know there's been a lot of talk about whether they'll postpone it or not. I think they need Seri to stay out there to be able to request a postponement for Saturday. It doesn't look like they're going to do that at the moment. I think they want to play the game. That's all the noises I've heard so far anyway. I think we're all heard similar things on that front. So planning ahead for the weekend. But I know we've had a lot of speculation about that. But I think with all the games that have been rearranged, trying to get this played is important. And Fulham have lost Anthony Robinson and Bobby Decker Dovery for the United States and for Jamaica for their World Cup qualifiers. And it hasn't extended to Tim Ream and Michael Hector as well. So for now, it's good.
Yeah, and it's good news that it's being played, in my opinion. I remember back in December where we spotted this potential problem. I think we expected one of Hector or Ream to get called up. And given the run of form that Fulham are on, and then the fixture pile-up that is kind of in place for February and a bit of March, it's not quite as severe as I think we once feared that it might be, particularly with the Middlesbrough game being put back to April. It seems like a sensible decision to play this game, Peter. Obviously, Robinson is going to be a loss. He's been playing well, but looks like Joe Bryan might be fit to play. He was isolating either with or because of COVID. I don't actually know the full SP there, but looks like he should be back for this game, all being well.
Yeah, looks like he will be back in contention for the game. I guess the only question mark concerns what's going on with Mitrovic and Wilson. Obviously, the official line is illness, but you can look into the rumours yourselves. So we'll see what comes from that, and what that means in terms of everyone else too. So, I think if they're fine, then yeah, I mean, that's going to be okay. And I mean, there's still enough in that squad. We saw against Stoke, they can do well. And as much as Blackpool are a good team, and we'll talk about them in a bit, but you'd think that Fulham could come through this game and give themselves a break further down the line rather than an extended Saturday, Tuesday slog for the foreseeable.
Yeah, Jack, what changes would you make then, other than the obvious one because of Robinson and Decker Dover-Reed's injuries? It is tough to know without Mitrovic and Wilson being confirmed whether they're back or not. I have a sneaky feeling they will be back, that Fulham will work out a way for them to return. But again, it is hard to know without any facts at all. There's no question of Rodrigo Muniz somehow staying in the starting lineup, even with Mitrovic returning.
Well, there's not if Mitrovic returns,
but not, no, not then... trying to find a way to play Muniz as well. I don't know, stick him on the wing or something.
I haven't enjoyed it when we've played the two of them together, to be honest, this season. They do feel like they get in each other's way a bit. I don't, you know, obviously we've seen switch of systems. We've seen us go two up top. They seem to go for the same ball a lot. Now, I imagine mostly that's because we don't spend too much time in practice or in training, working on a two up front formation, because we don't feel like we're going to use it that much. But when it very much is kitchen sink time from Mark, or when it has been, we've seen it a little bit, and it does feel a bit convoluted, shall we say. So I would be not trying to get them in together. But you know, you'd hope that if Mitrovic has been ill, or whatever the reason he's been out for, if he's been ill with whatever, then he might not be able to completely do 90 minutes. And that gives you an opportunity to give Rodrigo hopefully another 30 minutes with less pressure on him as well. You know, hopefully we'd already be winning a game by that point. We've seen Fulham start fast quite a lot. And you'd be looking for him to come on and try and, you know, make a dent, but also not have the necessary pressure that he had on him last week. Obviously he thrived under it, and I appreciate that, but you don't want to stick that on such young player all every week, right? So if you can get in minutes that are kind of comfy, then that's ideal. I don't think you make too many changes. I'd be really intrigued. Obviously, Joe Bryan coming back from isolation and from COVID. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on. And I suppose the big question therefore is if Kenny Tetter is out, which we assume because he walked off with what looked like a muscular injury, how do you fill the fullback void? If Bobby's gone, Dennis is going to have to play right back. And Joe Bryan is, you know, you'd assume going to have to play left back, which means there's no other senior fullbacks in the squad. Marlon Fossey's gone out on loan to Bolton, where he seems having a good time. But it does open up a potential spot for Ziad Larkesh, who's been having a bit of a stormer of a season with the unders, by all accounts, and is very much hailed as a real talent when Fulham brought him in a couple of years back. And maybe this is his opportunity, maybe not to be in the squad, be in the first team, but to be in the squad. And Marco does like rotating a fullback or two, so he might get a couple of minutes.
What do you think, Peter? Is it a possibility?
Yeah, absolutely. He's been training with the first team, so he wasn't involved with the under-23s game against Stoke. So reading between the lines there, he's clearly probably, with unless there's some kind of injury that I'm not aware of, then he may well give himself a chance of maybe, as Jack said, maybe not necessarily getting minutes, maybe he does, but or even necessarily getting on the squad list, but just giving the chance to impress in training as much as anything. Those sort of that time period when you spend with the senior coaching staff, they get to know you, they get to know your game. That's a really important opportunity. So even in that sense, it's good. And as Jack said, you know, he's been playing really well for the under-23s. He's won Premier League Two, Division Two Player of the Month a couple of times now, I think.
Yeah, I think it's twice.
Yeah, so it's twice. So that's really good going as well. I think he had an okay season last year, but he's definitely kicked on this time around with the team itself playing a lot better overall. We've talked about their fantastic winning run. So good opportunity for him. The other name is Steven Sessegnon as well. I think he's still around, but he hasn't been involved for a bit. So we'll see.
Yeah, a bit weird how we've gone from almost an embarrassment of riches at fullback only a few weeks ago. Then we've loaned out Cyrus Christie, we've loaned out Marlon Fossey, we've lost Anthony Robinson and Decadova Reed, who can both play fullback to the internationals. And yeah, and right now we are a little bit bare bones for this particular game. But of course, Robinson and Decadova Reed will be back for the Man City game, and then we'll be back to having more than enough of a complement of fullbacks. And speaking of Cyrus Christie, by the way, doing really well at Swansea in his early appearances for them. So big up, Si. Let's look ahead at Blackpool specifically then. And obviously, this is one of those teams that are one of the four teams to have beaten us so far this season. It was our first defeat of the season, Jack, up at Bloomfield Road. You were there. And I think we saw that at that point, Blackpool hadn't won a game, but I think we all knew that they were on the verge of doing so, and they're definitely no pushovers. They're in the top half of the table, which, considering they've come up from League One, is a brilliant return from them. They do haven't been on the best of runs recently. They've won a few games that they would expect to win, the likes of Millwall at home, Hull at home, Peterborough at home, and lost maybe some of the trickier games that they face against the likes of Middlesbrough and Derby, against the likes of Middlesbrough and Luton, etc. But most of all, they are an impressive team and one that I think we cannot underestimate, even given our run of form that we've been on. Again, I don't see this being a 6 or a 7. I think it could be a tight match, particularly with us missing a few key players.
Yeah, I mean, they're a well-drilled side that know what they're doing, and that obviously was their first win of the season, and then they went on a bit of a streak from there. I think they only lost 3 of their next 10, if I'm not mistaken, including the Fulham win. So it was a really impressive kind of kick on. Just before, in sort of mid-November, they had a good run of draws against good sides. They drew with QPR, who was up there, drew with West Brom, who obviously up there, drew with Swansea, who were on a bit of a charge themselves at that point. It does feel like they're a side that know how to frustrate and how to, get through teams, and they've done so, and they did so against us. Like, yes, we weren't very good that day, but you know, you double that down with the fact that Blackpool were quite good, and they, you know, they opened us up on a number of occasions. We looked defensively suspect, and we thought, I know at that point that it felt like Fulham were on a bit of a steamroll, but you know, they brought that down to earth pretty quickly, Yeah, it's going to be tricky, I would imagine. We're going to see similar results. They've had 2 1-0s in a row over the last couple of league fixtures. They've had a really odd one in the cup where they lost 2-1 to Hartlepool. And I'm not quite sure what was going on at that point. But, 2 1-0 wins at home of late, which you'd look at and think, okay, this is a side that doesn't concede many. They're not going to be any pushovers. And I think that Fulham should get the job done here, but in no stretch of the imagination is it going to be easy.
Blackpool have lost former Fulham man Luke Garber, I saw, to injury. They also have a couple of other former Fulham men in the likes of James Husband and Josh Bowler, who has actually been linked with us a little bit this January as well, Peter. He was the man that got the goal against Fulham back in September. What have you made of the limited times, I imagine, that you've seen Blackpool play this season?
I think it might be a slightly different team. So I mean, you sort of mentioned it there. I mean, they've lost a couple of players who've gone back on loan. I was just thinking back to the game back at Bloomfield Road. And I was very impressed with the midfield, which was Wintle and Stewart that day. And obviously, Stewart's still there, but Wintle's gone back to Cardiff. Tyrese John-Jules also caused a lot of problems. He's now gone on loan to Sheffield Wednesday, I think.
Yeah.
So I think...
Which is a bit of a strange move, that. He was doing okay.
Yeah, he seems to be a good fit, didn't it?
Yeah, odd.
But yeah, so I think it might be a slightly different Blackpool team with slightly different threats. And I think that was, the energy they had that day. Fulham were quite lethargic. It really did cause quite a few problems. And Bowler obviously scored the goal. I think he's had an okay season. I think he's been okay. He's obviously attracted a lot of interest. Forest, I think, are the big ones chasing him at the moment. I'm not sure about Fulham's interest. I wouldn't rule anything out, but it's not something I've heard myself. I'd be a little surprised, I think. But, they've had to have that reshuffle, which happens, I suppose, when you're doing well. Players then want to either compete back in their first team or their parent club, or want to see if they can go one better. So a little mix-up with them, but they've got a good coach in Neil Critchley. He's really done an impressive job with them, getting them up. And obviously, as you say, middle of the table at the moment, which is more than you'd want for a newly promoted side. And they will make life difficult. But I, looking at the strength of the two teams, even with Fulham's changes, it seems like this will be a game that Fulham should win.
Peter, only a few days away until the end of the transfer window. By the time next Thursday club rolls around, the transfer will have slammed shut. Do we have any indication of Fulham being active? As far as I'm hearing, it could be a transfer window of no arrivals, which sounds on the outset like a bad thing, but I think we didn't expect an awful lot, and I don't think we need an awful lot. But yeah, do we think that Tony might be tempted on January 31st, make a cheeky bid for a player or two?
I mean, obviously Tony's going to be tempted on the deadline day. Like, that's just what he does, isn't it?
He wakes up like Christmas. Who could I sign?
I would too if I was able to do things on deadline day. It'd be well fun. You'd be like, we're here. What am I going to get up to you today?
It's been a quiet window, but as you say, I don't think Fulham need to do anything drastic unless the circumstances change. Kenny Tetta's interesting, I think. I haven't heard any sort of... change of plan in the same way that Silva talked about in the summer, but he's got a groin injury, so however severe that is and what it may entail, then maybe that changes things, because as you say, Sammy, the fullbacks have gone out on loan. So one to see. I'm not expecting much. I'll always pencil off the entirety of deadline day as busy with Fulham right into the middle of the night. That's just seems to be how it goes. I've learned that one pretty quick. But yeah, it would just depend what becomes available, I suppose. And I think what Fulham probably don't want to do is end up with more bodies, what is already a big squad. We've seen about the links with Anthony Knockhart. They've received, I think, one I know about is the Como one, which is a really nice place to go. I mean, if you're going to go on loan somewhere, near Lake Como wouldn't be too bad at
all. Wasn't Jack Wilshere there for a bit?
Playing. Did he play or was he just training?
No, I think he just trained with them for a while. If I'm not mistaken, doesn't Jody Morris own it or something? Isn't he part of the staff or someone bizarre? Is it Dennis Wise? Someone of that ilk is involved with Como. Jack Wilshere, I think, was there training for a while he was trying to get fit.
No idea, but that is very cool if it was true.
I can imagine Mrs. Knockhart being quite happy with that one.
I'm just trying to find out who this
you're right, Jack.
Is.
He's the CEO. Dennis Wise is the CEO.
Wow.
There you go. Random niche.
That's a nice place to be. But yeah, so if he goes out, and then obviously Terrace Kongolo is the other defender they want to move on to get him some minutes. There's interest from Dutch clubs in him. Whether he actually gets a loan, we will see. Maybe then you have different circumstances, and maybe then you might see a move that's probably been looked at. But I've not had the indication that there's any desperate need. Obviously, there are players they're interested in. You see them pop up every now and again. But at this point, it's looking quiet. But famous last words, and we'll talk about that next week.
And then news of Jay Stansfield's contract. Jack, he's signed until 2024. Fulham have the option to extend his contract until 2025. Been a bit of a strange season for Jay. I think maybe he would have hoped to make a few more inroads with the first team, but the arrival of Rodrigo Muniz has kind of sewn up that second strike. And the injury has sewn up that second striker slot. But then again, he's had positives this year. He has had some minutes. He scored that brilliant goal against Birmingham in the League Cup, which I think was massively important. Just a slight, like, I am a serious player kind of moment for Jay Stansfield. One that certainly made the Fulham fans, I think, stand up and take notice if they hadn't already. And look, Fulham have had a long history of not tying down players before they've broken into the team onto decent contracts. It feels like Jay's moment is around the corner. It's important that we've done this. And hopefully this is the start of a trend at Fulham that we sign players up before they...
It's too late.
It's too late. I mean, I know that there's complicated reasons why Fulham can't. It's not necessarily because Fulham just forgot or don't realise or whatever, but it's a good sign, I think, and maybe a bit of progress on that front. Because if Jay Stansfield becomes a brilliant player in the next couple of years, at least Fulham might get a bit of a fee for him if there's transfer interest elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, it's tricky, right? And it's one of those positions where he's obviously come in behind Alexander Mitrovic, who leads the line, who is the club's number nine. Muniz has come in and he's been good for long periods. His goal record, as we spoke about earlier, is excellent. And it does limit opportunities. I suppose maybe what we'd like to see, and maybe what would be nice to see, is a little bit more if Fulham are trying to chuck the kitchen sink at teams and Fulham are trying to play two strikers up front, maybe thinking about the fact that Stansfield is a slightly different mold of striker to the other two is something that will come into play later down the line, because it does give you that something different rather than just having two players who are trying to do the same thing, you know, up that top. So maybe Stansfield opportunity comes about because of that. You know, we're seeing this and we saw Muniz step up and be that guy. So there's obviously going to be moments, but it's really nice to see Jay Stansfield sign that contract. Obviously important to try and tie young players who have been absolutely unbelievable down for the first team. And you look at, you know, in the future, 2-3 years down the line, that might be absolutely crucial, because that might have been the point where Jay Stansfield really did come into his own. We're still, you know, there is that question as to if you could shift Jay Stansfield into a wide forward role, if you do start to play with more direct wingers and you are looking at playing two wingers who do the same thing, cut inside and try and get onto their shooting foot. Is there a place for Jay Stansfield playing off one of the sides to try and come inside? I know that's how a lot of young strikers these days, you look at someone like Rafael Leao at AC Milan, who isn't going to get into that number nine spot because Zlatan and Giroud are there, and has kind of reverted to that left forward role where he's been absolutely devastating this season, getting in behind, getting onto that strong foot and getting behind the defensive line, especially if you don't have runners, and we don't in Mitrovic, who make that run particularly often. So there's things to consider in that regard in terms of how Jay plays, but really good to see it get over the line. And in the words of our social channels yesterday, one down, one to go.
Yeah, Peter, it is really great news. And of course, it is leading a lot of people to think whether Fulham can achieve the same with Fabio. I assume no news on that. But aside from that, a really great moment. You did that fantastic piece on Jay's dad, the Adam Stansfield Foundation, a few weeks ago. He comes from a great family, a brilliant cause, and well worth a read that, by the way, if you haven't read it already, on The Athletic, theathletic.com/Fulham pod, if you want to sign up. it feels like he's on the cusp of something really good for Fulham. And actually, I thought what Jack said there, potentially playing him as a wide forward instead of trying to directly replace Alexander Mitrovic could be a sensible suggestion. Marco Silva seems to like to give Niskins a rest and take him off 20 minutes before the end. And generally that's for a Deckard over Reed. But maybe Stansfield could be a surprising option, especially if we're in control of a game.
Yeah, I think if you're a youngster, you probably will play anywhere that you can, really. And if it means that gives him more opportunities, as Jack outlined, then there's certainly something he should consider. I think he's had sort of moments in those areas for the youth team. I think mainly plays through the middle or just off a striker. Maybe yeah. That could be sort of his role as well. And it is really good news. And I think also just one other thing is that for those in the academy now, some of the young players looking upwards, it shows that some players do stay. we know there is a lot of noise about those who go, but some do stay. And whether he does kick on now, whether he does make those next steps, we'll see. And it's the same with any young player. And injuries change things. All sort of things can happen. But he's clearly got a lot of potential. And even if he doesn't take that next step, you know, Fulham are in a good position where longer term they can make money. They can, if they were to sell him. I hope he fulfills his potential, but it leaves him in a good position in that sense. And yeah, as you say, Sam, he's on that cusp now of breaking into first team and getting senior minutes. That's got to be his priority. It'd be interesting to see what happens if Fulham go up to the Premier League. I imagine he might be an opportunity to go into the Championship and get minutes that way. We'll have to see how he does in these next few weeks, see if he can really take those next steps to really say I can be in the first team picture, particularly in the top flight too. But yeah, his family will be really proud, and you know, it's he's following in the footsteps of his dad Adam, and you know, it's a really lovely story, and it's great to see him continue his journey at Fulham.
Yeah, we got a couple of emails. We're going to do some more emails in a second, but a couple of them were on youth football, so it seems pertinent to bring them in here. Keith from Bournemouth writes, "My reason for contacting you guys was it was sad to see that Patrick Roberts has been released on a free by Man City and has gone to League One with Sunderland. I know he had stints with Celtic and Norwich, but he was hailed as some sort of new Johnny Haynes for us, and it seems a real shame that he didn't stay put. Yes, he's probably secure for life by financially, but boy, it seems such a waste." Jack, what's your thoughts on Patrick Roberts going to Sunderland? I mean, the downfall of Roberts, I just think, is just terribly sad. I don't blame him or think that I think we'd have all been very tempted to make the same move in his shoes. But yeah, it's a real shame what's happened to Patrick. I hope that Sunderland is maybe the place where he finds his name. And look, maybe he can be a top class Football League attacking midfielder once again. Whether he gets back to the Premier League remains to be seen, probably unlikely, but let's hope at least he can try and make his name in League One or the Championship, because he's surely good enough to cut his mustard there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really strange one, right? I'm really glad he's finally kind of cut adrift of the Man City machine, right, in some ways. Now, obviously, City is an amazing place for certain players to be and certain players to come through. And I'm not knocking Man City as a whole, because I think that they've done a really good job in certain players and their development. But it wasn't the right place for Patrick Roberts. Now, we didn't know this at the time, and he couldn't have known this at the time, although he was a Liverpool fan and Liverpool were interested in him. And he decided to go to City instead. And maybe there's something in that. But it just was all these things where he wasn't playing at Fulham. It's really easy to forget that now, that when Patrick Roberts left, he wasn't getting games under Kit Simons. Kit Simons was, you know, reticent to use him. And we saw that through the year. And eventually he left at the end of that year, having had a good year for the youngers, but not anything in the first team, when it felt like Fulham were crying out for creativity. So do I blame him for leaving at that time? Absolutely not. Because it was go and play in the academy at Manchester City or go and play in the academy at Fulham, because no one is giving you a first team chance. You're obviously going to take the academy of the higher club every time. I think this is quite different to someone like a Harvey Elliott or a Fab in this regard, because I think those players would be getting more first team minutes if they stick around. Whereas I didn't think that was the case with Patrick Roberts. Obviously, he went off to Celtic and was absolutely unbelievable for a little while. He had two really good years, or I think it might have been a year and a half, but at Celtic, where I think he was on loan twice in separate occasions. He was brilliant, like really, really, really good. A big part of title winning teams. He won cups, he won trebles, he won the whole shebang at Celtic, and they wanted to sign him permanently, and City said no. And when that happened, he then went through this really weird spiral where he didn't go anywhere for a little while. And then he went off to Girona, if I'm not mistaken, on loan. And then he had little stints with Norwich. He got called back after 6 months after not playing, went off to Middlesbrough, didn't really set the place on fire. I think he was at Derby, perhaps, at one point. And then he went off this year to Troyes in France, who are another part of the City network. And it just wasn't working out there either. So I'm really glad that he's free of this kind of overarching thing about having to come back to City and return. And maybe Sunderland is the place. It's easy to forget that despite the fact this League One, they're a massive club. With an incredible home support, and it does feel like a matter of time before Sunderland are back in the Championship. And once they are and they start to get their feet back under the table, you'd imagine if they've sorted out the absolute catastrophe what it was at the start of that club, it does feel like they're moving in the right direction, and perhaps there is something to say about them returning to the top level. Whether he's part of that or not is a different question, but I hope it's somewhere where he's given the minutes, given the options, and therefore can start to get his career back on track, because he really was a special talent. And it was sad to see how it kind of spiraled out of control.
Rufus asks the question saying, by the way, love the podcast, been listening since 2018, and with no Fulham supporting friends, this podcast is a godsend. So thank you for listening, Rufus, and I'm glad that we keep you company. He said, my question is, why can't the club convince our youth products to stay? I understand our status as a yo-yo club is a problem, but we're in a very affluent area of London. There's a guarantee that they might occasionally play some Premier League football. The alternative is going to big clubs, sitting the under 23s, getting cup games, and maybe the last 10 minutes on occasion. That's stalls their development, so they send them out on loan, sending this young kids to clubs with different objectives, cultures and identities, and always to a team worse than us. He then says that we actually could have a team of youth products who either moved away from Fulham at an early age or are still there now. And he understands the economical model of Fulham having an academy, and this comes back to Fabio Carvalho, Peter, is just why are Fulham struggling to get some of these players nailed down? And I'll lead that on to, have you heard much about whether Fabio is staying or going in the last week? Has the needle changed?
I mean, we've talked about how Fulham struggles with keeping players, and each situation tends to be unique. I think Fulham's main issues are, as he acknowledged there, you know, the fact that they are going up and down through the divisions is the big problem. It's a big problem. Without that stability, you have a manager either fighting to stay in the top flight or fighting to get promotion, and that reduces the chance that they will take a risk on a younger player. And when you have a manager turnover, and Fulham have changed their manager quite a few times in the last 5 years, you're not building one relationship with the manager, but two, they're not learning about the players. They're not going to give you that chance to trust. And when they come in, they want their own players. They will want, you know, when they've got to try and play those risks. When Marcus Silva comes in, sure, he has used a lot of young players and things have gone well, so that helps. But you want to, if you're offered the chance of signing someone that you know is already a senior pro, already has X amount of appearances, you're more likely to do it. And you guys talked about it as well. There was that sort of dilemma of, what do you want to be? Where do you want to go as a club? Do you want to just really focus on these young players coming through and take the hits that come with it? Because when you do, I think Arsene Wenger made that famous quote that sometimes if you play a younger player, you're going to lose, I don't know, 12 points in a season because of the mistakes they make. If we were to take Fabio's situation, obviously Fabio's in the first team now, so that's not really the question for him about playing. It's the level he can play at and what he thinks is best for his development. Where does he think his career path would be best served? Would it be playing for Fulham in the Premier League next year, in a team that's battling against relegation, or would it be learning from or training alongside players at an elite club, or potentially getting a loan into a different environment? Who knows? But these are the other factors that they will be factoring in terms of what suits them and what will work. And each player is individual. Some will see that as Fulham being the best way to do it, and others won't. In terms of Fabio Carvalho's situation, it's dragging on a bit. Fulham don't want to sell him, understandably. I mean, you can see his importance to the team. If he doesn't sign anything, and if it ends up dragging on towards the end of the season, there will be a battle. I mean, I've heard all sorts of clubs, and to be honest, it's you always see the different names that are mentioned, and part of me sometimes goes, well, who isn't actually interested, who isn't actually looking at him at the moment?
Who would go, no thanks, I don't fancy this really talented
18-year-old? Well, apparently Southampton have. That's something that I've heard on the grapevine the last couple of days. And Southampton at one point looked to be front runners for Fabio Carvalho. It looks like they have seen all this latest bits and bobs with Liverpool and with the agent change and gone, not quite sure actually we want this kind of bloke in the club. So the reports are that Southampton's interest has cooled on Fabio Carvalho. Now, that's not to say they would say no if he suddenly rocked up, I'd imagine, to St Mary's tomorrow and said, no, I'm coming here, I want to come here.
Lifelong Saints fan.
But very much they seem to have cooled their interest.
Yeah, and that sort of follows up when we talk about Liverpool, because Liverpool are interested. Liverpool really like him. And I think once that starts to become more public knowledge, that can influence what other clubs want to make overtures. Now, in terms of Fabio's situation right now, I did a piece last week with a couple of my colleagues, with James Pearce, covers Liverpool, Kiva O'Neill also covers Liverpool, and Adam Leventhal, who does Watford for us. Fabio's situation, obviously, is represented by his family at the moment, and there are different agents around him bringing proposals, essentially, to him about his opportunities, what other opportunities lie ahead, and then it's down to his family, I suppose, and Fabio about what they want to do next. Now, we mentioned George Mendes last week. George Mendes is one who's approached the family, according to one source we've spoken to. So it's not a straightforward situation, other than for me at this point, I don't feel particularly confident that he will stay. But that's more my opinion on just how this is sort of playing out at the moment. You look at it and go, he's got a good situation at Fulham. He's playing a manager that really likes him. I mean, we see every time he talks about him, he infuses about him. But it's, you know, if Liverpool come knocking, then this goes back to the original question, I suppose. Does he want to? He sees what's happened with Harvey Elliott. He's basically taken that path. And you go, well, there is maybe a pathway there. I could train with some fantastic players. Do they have necessarily the resources of Man City to suddenly just buy everyone? Don't really get that impression from Liverpool. Got a very good manager. You know, these things can have an impact.
They don't play with a 10, though, which is my big gripe about him going to Liverpool. Now, that's not to say that Fabio can't play wide or that Liverpool might change their system in time to come. But it doesn't feel like he'll walk straight into that team. What I do think you've got nailed on there, though, is that there's a point to which if you come up with Fulham to the Premier League, how much ball, how much, you know, I think he'll get minutes. It's not about that. It's about how many opportunities you get to actually showcase your talent in a team that don't have as much of the ball and are struggling to readapt. And we've talked about this before on the podcast. You know, going up to Premier League isn't about, are you the best team in the Championship? That means absolutely nothing. What it means is how quickly you adapt to the rigors of the Premier League. And if you do that, how often does your number 10 get the ball in the spaces that he wants, where he can make a difference? And is it better for a young player trying to make their mark at that point to be at a big club? And I think the Harvey Elliott one's a key one here. It's a really good one. You go, right, what they did is they brought him in and they loaned him back to a Championship side when Fulham were playing in the Premier League. That seems a bit mad, right? But actually, it doesn't in so many ways, because what you want is you loan them back to a side who are dominant, who have the same philosophy as the top club that you are therefore on loan from, and therefore they can learn from those players. Now, obviously, there is moving about. There's getting yourself into new environments. There's a chance that they won't take to you, and the fans won't take to you, or the players won't take to you, whatever that is. But you are at least in an environment when you go on loan, you know, from a Man City to someone like a Blackburn, or from, you know, a Chelsea or a Liverpool to a Norwich when they're in the Championship, because they get those same kind of, okay, you're going to have a lot of the ball, you're going to see a lot of, you can see why, you know, players make that path, because they are learning in an environment that is not as competitive as, but mirrors the opportunities they would get if they were in a top dominant side. And I do understand that conception.
Yeah, I think though, when you say about like the prospect of then Fabio going back to that, I'm not necessarily saying it would happen, but like the prospect of Fabio then having to go back to the Championship next year, when clearly he's good enough to play a level above, you know, I don't see what's wrong with him trying to, you know, prove himself in a club that's lower down. Yes, he might have less of the ball and stuff, but surely I just thought that was better for his development than just knocking it about with Norwich again next season and scoring another 20. As enjoyable as maybe that is, surely he wants something better for himself when he can play at that level. I get.
Well, City will also point to Phil Foden.
I was
right?
going to say actually,
and say, look, we kept him around. We didn't send him on loan because we wanted him to shadow the best players in the world in his position and learn from them, so that when he came into the first team, he was ready. And you could say that. And now, does that add up for Liverpool? I went on a Liverpool transfer podcast and talked about this a bit. I'm not completely convinced that Liverpool is the fit that I would be sending Fabio Carvalho to. I don't think he has a natural position in that squad right now, and there's no one for natural for him to shadow. All of the above. I don't think that's... But if you go to him, okay, move left and shadow Sadio Mane. I'm not sure he's going to be there being like, no. So you do obviously get those different opportunities. You can potentially mould him into a slightly different player, but that would be my big drawback on Liverpool, not the idea of him going there and saying, I'm not ready.
All right, we're going to take a break there, and afterwards we're going to get in some of your emails.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Part three of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy James here with Jack Collins and Peter Rutzler. Right, time for some emails. One normal email before we do this or catch on. And this one is from Will Kemp, who says, I have tickets for the Blackpool match, a Christmas gift from my wife, as I've never been before. He says, obviously, I'm aware it might get postponed, but hopefully not. Doesn't look like it's getting postponed, Will, so good news on that front. He then says, other than Fulham, can you London-based people recommend any unusual must-see pubs? I am travelling from Newcastle, so don't get to London much since I left the Southeast aged 18. He says, great pod, keep up the good work. Well, we replied to this email. Drew actually replied to it on our behalf, and he recommended the Bricklayers in Putney, which is a decent boozer. The Ship Inn in Wandsworth, which is a very trendy place to... That's down the road from you, Peter, isn't it?
It
the
is
Ship Inn.
A stone's throw, as they say.
And the Blue Boat in Hammersmith. I just wondered if either of you two have any other recommendations for Will.
Or like near Fulham?
No, London, generally. I think he's interested in general fun London boozers.
Yeah, I mean... John O's in Ealing Common. I'm joking. It's not open again yet, so we can't go there.
What's the one, one near Waterloo, Jack, that you and I have been to quite a bit down that cobbled street?
The King's Arms. I think it's called the King's Arms. It's the pub that they crashed the car into in Legend, if you've seen that. It's on that street, Rupel Street, just off Waterloo Station. That's quite nice, yeah. It's a nice little old school boozer, that one, in a road that looks like it could either be on the set of Peaky Blinders, or in this case, it is the set of Legend.
Any other boozers that come to mind, or have we picked a few already that Will can go to?
Going really far away from where I live, two pubs I really like are in Stoke Newington, the Clissold Park Tavern and the Old Shillelagh. The CPT has a massive beer garden. It's lots of fun. And the Old Shillelagh's tiny, has like a one kind of column entrance and often has a band in the back. But two good pubs if you're up that end of town.
Nice. Okay, right. We'll do some This or Catch On. And first of all, we have some exciting news that one of the chants that we played on this podcast 2 weeks ago did actually become a chant. Now, maybe it's slightly cheating because
it was
already a chant. It was only on a bus, though. It was only on a bus. We recorded it. We were genuinely, I feel like, the first people to... you know, put it out there. But yes, it did already have a head start. It's Super Trooper by ABBA for Harry Wilson, Mitrovic and Neeskins. And this is a recording of it being sung on Saturday away at Stoke. So There we go. It did. And Peter said he heard it himself from the press box.
Yeah. No, I did. No, it was good. I was impressed. You know, it's good to see it catch on.
It literally has caught on. 10 out of 10.
It's right, catched next. On.
It's called This Will Catch On. It's got a catched on past tense. No, it doesn't really work. Okay, next one is another ABBA song, you'll be pleased to know. This one is from Jack Stroudley, who made his podcast debut on Sunday, and he's been texting me for a couple of weeks bugging me about this one, so I promised him I would play it. He said, got a chant for your section on the pod. It's to the tune of Lay All Your Love On Me by ABBA, and it's a Tosin song. So instead of going, don't go wasting your emotion, lay all your love on me, it goes, we've got Tosin Adarabio plays at the back with Reem. We've got another recording of it. This was Jack and a very drunk mate on a train somewhere, maybe at Stoke, dunno, but it's funny.
We've got Tosin Adarabio.
I mean, I thought it had more than that. I'm going to lie. I thought they did a whole verse.
Is a whole verse, but like no one's got time for the verse. And they didn't know the words. So like...
I like it. I saw that's those good. Boys at Stoke and they were quite keen to make sure that worked. So fair play. Yeah, very, very good.
This one is from Matt and he's in Australia. He says that this one is maybe aged at the 50 plus age group. The song was a big hit in the 1970s. He says, maybe your dads will understand. It's by Quantum Jump, The Lone Ranger. I must admit, I wasn't particularly aware of this song. Sorry to people that offends. And as ever, we've got a voice recording, so we'll play it now. This is Matt's singing of The Lone Ranger, which is a song for Marco Silva.
Hi-ho, Silva, away. The Fulham went home and away. But who is the master, you say? That is Marco Silva. I hold Silver away.
Me, I think he's just repeating it.
The Fulham went home and away. But who is the master, you say? That is Marco Silver. I think you get it.
I like it a lot, but I can't imagine how badly the Hammersmith end would deal with that last bit, trying to work out how long to hold the ooh. Yeah. It would be an absolute catastrophe. It would be a mess.
The Hammersmith end still struggles to sing Can't Take My Eyes Off You in unison. So
with
yeah,
the backing might... track.
He goes on to say, maybe I've had too much sun in Oz. Maybe you have, Matt.
I liked it though. I enjoyed it. As a song, I did like real good. Just I just can't see us being able to handle that timing. There's way too many like beats going on.
Peter, were you aware of the song The Lone Ranger by Quantum Jump?
No, not a clue. Not a clue. No idea what was going on there.
Me neither.
It was a nice vibe. It was a nice vibe. That's all. Don't think we'll catch on though.
We haven't got a clip for this one, but Jerry Smith says, I think it's time to stop singing the praises of Muhammad Al-Fayed and come up with a song for Shahid Khan, bearing in mind the amount he has poured into the club.
What do you mean? He went to France in a Lamborghini and picked us up a wonder kid whose name was Adil Jihi.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely hasn't caught on other than you. Jerry's suggestion is, he's big, he's flash, he wears a big moustache, Shahid Khan, Shahid Khan.
Yeah, that'll catch on. That's good.
I quite liked it.
That will catch on. That's not hard. People will do that. I quite like that.
There we go. He's big, he's flash, he wears a big moustache, Shahid Khan. Repeat ad infinitum.
I like the idea of he wears rather than he has a big moustache, as if it's like stuck on with glue.
He wakes up every morning and goes, excuse me, Mrs. Khan, pass me the moustache, please. Okay, final one is from Dan Reed. Says, hi guys, love the pod. Amusing, insightful, entertaining, but most of all fun. Keep up the good work. He says, I thought I would give the It Will Never Catch On a bash. Not quite the name, but we'll be close enough.
It's probably more accurate though, isn't it?
Yeah, fair point. Maybe we should change the name to It Will Never Catch On.
This won't catch on.
He sent us two here, and they're fantastic. Both quite short though, so I think we've got time to play both. He says, hoping to stand out by coming up with some songs for the back line. The first is in regards to Tosin, to the tune of Stevie Wonder's Very Superstitious. Timing of song to be sung is obviously after a magnificent defensive masterclass. So this one is Dan Reed's song for Tosin Adebayo to Stevie Wonder.
Tosin Adebayo. Writings on the wall. Tosin Adebayo, he always gets the ball.
Very position specific, that one as well.
Yeah. And then he then says the second is for Kenny Tete to the tune of Mamma Mia.
Yes, more ABBA.
So this is Dan Reed's second suggestion.
Kenny Tete, flying down the wing. My, my, he is our crossing king.
Whoa! We just got to get the next bit and we'll be fine.
Yeah, I feel like he's finished them too early. We needed part two in both of them.
Yeah.
I wanted to see what he wanted to do for 13-month-old baby in the Superstitious line. What we rate that, Jack?
How many clean sheets have we got this season? If we get 13 clean sheets this season, we can write the next lines of it. We'll have a look. I don't think we are.
What we rating that one, Jack?
Very good. 2 7.5s for me. Very, very enjoyable. They just need to be longer, but I did enjoy them a lot.
Yeah.
I just want someone to write the next bit of the Mamma Mia thing. And by the someone, I mean probably me. We got a couple of brilliant ones that I'm working quite hard on. We got one a couple of weeks ago from Michael Wheeler, who said he wanted Harry Wilson into Jackie Wilson said, I'm in heaven when you smile. He said by Dexy's Midnight Runners, but I've always considered that a Van Morrison song. So that's okay. It also has a really good chanty bit. So that's fun. But I've decided we're going to try and write the whole thing into a song. So that's with George Cooper and I are working on that at the moment. And we're also going to rewrite the one from Cabanarama, which is Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting to Fabio Carvalho, but it's taking longer than planned. So both of those are on the way, but we're going to try and do them properly.
When will we get the album? When's it dropping?
I don't know. I mean, George has already released a couple of songs. Those of you who've been listening long enough will remember, including the Anthony Knockhart, the Passion Machon song, which was absolutely sensational a couple of years back. Obviously, Cooper's got form for this. So we're looking forward to getting a few new ones out there. Hopefully we're with you relatively soon.
Okay, can't wait for that. All right, well, thank you very much for listening to the podcast today. Another Thursday Club and more chant suggestions this time next week. So, Jack Collins, thank you very much for being on.
Thank you for having me, Sammy. Always a pleasure.
And Peter Rutzler, thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's been fun.
Wishing you a happy transfer deadline day.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's always good fun.
Enjoy it. All right, we'll see if we can make it 5 in a row against Blackpool. I very much hope so. Have a lovely weekend. Come on, you Whites.
You Whites. We've got Tosin Adebayo. Plays at the back with Dream. Very good.